It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you for joining me. We got a wonderful show this morning as we talk about really the whole nature of conservation and conservation funding and where it might be going and some historical lessons, but also a look ahead. We have Carrie Luft from the Max McGraw Wildlife Foundation, who I've had the pleasure of having on the air many times with me this morning. And Carrie, as we start, I'm going to offer this introduction. The show this morning has no partisan tenor whatsoever. None of my shows hopefully do. It's a show that is going to talk about the future of conservation and whether you agree with the cutting that's going on in government or you don't agree. That is not the point of this morning's show. The point of this morning's show is to talk about where we're going and some of the issues that might arise with the trajectory we're currently on. It is not a show about whether cutting government is good or bad or how you feel about it. So I preface it because I think we're going to be talking, Carrie, about something which people one side or the other may feel very passionately about, but you and I are going to talk about how this actually works or can work or doesn't work. So thank you for joining me, Carrie. I really appreciate it. And you're as thoughtful an individual as I know in the country on these matters. So I guess my first question to you is, where in this right now do you think conservation is? And I'm separating that from environmentalism. Where do you think conservation is? And is conservation even a topic? Or are people focused on other things such as their own immediate survival? Where are we?
I'm not going to say what people, I'm not going to speak for others, but as somebody looking in, it seems to be that the overall feeling in the conservation community is one of trepidation after thousands of layoffs involving Fish and Wildlife Service, National Park Service, Forest Service. There's been a lot of talk that the Park Service won't be able to handle the influx of tourists this summer. But I hope and think we're kind of in early stages of this, Charlie, that there's potential for some things to be restored that have been cut, for some people to be called back to work. It's happened a little bit already, but I think anybody who's not in the administration has no real idea of what's coming. The firings that were announced in February took a lot of people, not just in government, but in NGOs across the country by surprise. There was a recent gathering of conservation professionals this past week in Louisville, and from what I gathered, the mood there was pretty gloomy. But, I think we have to hope for the best and see whether these cuts will be recalculated as more discovery is done, really, about what these programs are for and why they were instituted in the first place.
Well, from my long history in conservation and yours as well, I would offer this to everyone listening. Conservation has been setting the standard for how the private and public sector can work together for a lot of years. And it goes back to early on when private conservation groups worked with the government, whether it was Save Refuges Carry or carry out programs. But it really accelerated with the North American Waterfowl Management Plan, the largest collaborative program in the history of the United States for conservation, and continues today. And so I wonder, Carrie, if conservation doesn't have a unique perspective, because it fostered public-private partnerships in ways that other areas did not, and it had a specific cause, conservation. And in doing so, it today delivers some of the most cost-efficient programs there possibly can be. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Oh, you're absolutely right, Charlie. The thing that gives me pause is I sure would like to hear, coming out of the administration, what the plan is. If the plan is to leverage public-private partnerships to get more efficient programming and reduce the scope of government, but still deliver some of the essential services, benefits that conservation does deliver, I'm all for it. I think it would be a great thing. Unfortunately, all we're really hearing at this point is about the cuts. So the cuts are one thing. What comes after is what really matters. And I have not seen anything that indicates what where the administration is headed on this.
I was going to say, so we're sitting here on Sunday morning, and we don't know any more than anybody else, as you said, unless you're inside the administration. What are some of the best public-private partnership programs that you think of that should certainly be maintained when this is all over?
Well, there's a lot, Charlie. I mean, you hit the nail on the head with the North American Waterfowl Management Plan. I mean, the conservation that's delivered on the ground in Canada with federal dollars as part of the tripartite agreement that makes up the NAWAMP/NACA programs. In Canada, that's mostly delivered by the private sector, namely Ducks Unlimited Canada. And in certain areas, it's delivered in south of the border as well. Pheasants Forever has a lot of biologists who are at least partly funded through the Farm Bill, which is the conservation title of the Farm Bill, as you know, is the largest bit of conservation legislation we have. And it's up for renewal, and no one really knows what's going to happen there either. So, you know, if you're familiar with DU Canada, Mule Deer Foundation, lots and lots of the NGOs that your listeners, Charlie, are probably members or at least have heard of, take federal dollars and leverage them on the ground using private sector efforts. And they have worked pretty well.
And I would offer, and those of us who deal in acronyms, we shouldn't, NGO stands for non-governmental organizations. And I would offer that, because I've been involved in this a long time, and I perhaps have a bias, that in the conservation community, we have actually already figured out how to streamline government over many years. And we have figured out how to leverage money, for instance, the North American Plan. And Ducks Unlimited, their monies are leveraged 3 and 4 times to 1. So it's the conservation community has been doing this out of necessity because the federal government wasn't doing this before, and they've delivered it very effectively.
Here's a great example. There's $100 million in funds that came out in the Inflation Reduction Act that went to non-governmental conservation organizations, including the Wild Turkey Federation, the Mule Deer Foundation, and the Rough Grouse Society, to work on private lands to reduce wildfire risk and enhance wildlife habitat. The government simply didn't have the reach to do it, but they used the funds to get it in the hands of people who would deliver it well and efficiently. And, you know, revenues getting on the ground in some of the most remote parts of the country because of these efforts.
And so we're going to go for a break in a moment, Kerry, but What I think you and I are trying to say here is that, or I'm trying to say, I shouldn't put words in your mouth. What I'm trying to say is that if you want to look at a model for how the federal government can work with the private sector, look at the conservation community and look what the leaders in that community have been doing for a long time. I have no idea what takes place outside of the conservation community, but that model actually exists. And maybe you could argue that we didn't need $100 million. That's a totally separate discussion. I think what we're really saying, or I'm saying, is the private sector is already delivering so much of this on the ground that the federal government is not capable of. And if they tried to take it on, it would be vastly more costly. Do you have any final thought before we go to break?
Well, Charlie, I couldn't agree with you more on the value of public-private partnerships for conservation. My worry, I surely wish that someone would step up and say, hey, this is our end goal, to leverage more partnerships with private and public and to deliver actually more conservation more efficiently. I don't care what side of the aisle you sit on, you should be in favor of efficiency. And I haven't heard that yet. We may never hear it. We may hear it next week. Who knows? But that is what I'm waiting to hear.
Well, and I know all of you listening are waiting to hear from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers, who've been with us for over 25 years. You're listening to Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go, worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Thank you for being with us. My guest, Kerry Luft of the Max McGraw Wildlife Foundation. So, Kerry, this is a farm bill year, or it's supposed to be a farm bill year. I won't ask you to handicap whether or not we're going to get one, but what many people may not fully recognize is the importance of conservation in the Farm Bill that funds so many of these conservation efforts that are taking place, which we talked about in the first part of the show. And I guess at this point in time, who are the big advocates, if there are any, for being forward-looking in the Farm Bill to try to bring about conservation, not climate change, not the things that happened previously, but for conservation? Who are the spokesmen?
Well, Charlie, historically, the spokespeople for the conservation have been Ducks Unlimited, Audubon Society, Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership, Pheasants Forever especially has been a strong advocate for the CRP Conservation Reserve Program that sets aside environmentally sensitive lands to protect against erosion and defend soil quality. Though, most of our non-governmental organizations that deal with birds and habitat, they have been huge advocates for the conservation title of the Farm Bill. Now, I don't know right now the state of play in terms of what those organizations are doing. My suspicion is they're waiting for a lot of shoes to fall before they start lobbying or pounding the drum. But I do know that other non-governmental organizations are taking a hard look and understanding that if cuts are going to be made, can we make them surgically? Can we make them more effective? This is going to dip a little bit into politics, Charlie, but the Project 2025 blueprint that was much talked about during the fall election calls for the outright elimination of the Conservation Reserve Program. I think that's a bit much. Can CRP be reformed to be more efficient? Yes. Should it be? Absolutely. But if it goes away, Charlie, that's our biggest defense for grassland habitat in the country. So I would say most of the forward-thinking organizations are saying, okay, we're accepting the reality that cuts are coming. In part, that's what Trump was elected on. Let's be smart about them. And I hope that sentiment is shared across the conservation spectrum, because I'd rather be proactive and get the best possible outcome for conservation than sit back and wait and see what we get.
So I'm going to add there, Kerry, my view is that the Conservation Reserve Program, which was created in the 1995 Farm Bill, and many people simply called it CPR because it was a resuscitation program at a time when conservation, when farmers were really struggling, and it was a way to get money into the farmers' hands. And it turned out that they could do a lot of great things for conservation, soil and water quality in particular. I would offer, since it's WGN and I have the microphone right now, we should call it the Conservation Revenue Program, because what we have to do is deliver for agriculture ways for them to make profit on the land they're farming. I've said this so many times. A farmer is running a factory, and he's got to run it efficiently. And if we can come up with efficient ways to help the farmer have soil and water and air quality improvements, that's going to benefit everybody and benefit wildlife tremendously. It's about revenue for agriculture. And what I worry is that we don't understand just how important it is for landowners to have the opportunity to do things for the societal good. When you enrolled in CRP, you were doing something for the societal good and you got paid for it. That's what I hope the conservation community doesn't lose focus of, is we're trying to enable people to be paid to do things for the good of society.
And if you don't pay them, you can't expect them to do it. It is not easy to be a farmer. And it's just one of the things that drives me up a tree, frankly, Charlie, is when people say landowners and farmers should do this out of the good of their heart. No, they're trying to make a living just like you and me. So we have to make it economically reasonable for the landowner to participate in conservation.
And that is maybe where, Carrie, we're going to finally break through. If you're looking at leaner government expenditures, which, as you said, is what the president was he ran on it, and that's what he's going to try to deliver. If you believe that's going to happen, then conservation has to become a part of how every landowner operates their farm. It's not a side element. It's a part of it. And getting revenues to do good for society is, for some reason, so hard for Congress to understand. And yet that's the whole core, and I travel America talking to farmers, as you know I do, and all of them say, I want to do good things, just show me how I can afford to do it, because I do at the end of the day, I am running a business.
Yeah, it is a business, and we're being foolish or naive if we think of it in any other way. So, even Aldo Leopold, the sainted guru of modern conservation, said back in the 30s, conservation depends on the private landowner. The government can't deliver it at the scale that's necessary. It has to be private landowners who take up the slack and deliver more efficiently conservation on the ground.
So I would offer, if anyone in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is listening this morning, the way to do it is to empower farmers through revenue to do good things for society, and they'll do it. And after all, no one can produce better than the American farmer. So, Carrie, we got 20 seconds left.
And I will say one last thing, Charlie. I think you're exactly right. I think it's a wonderful way to make government programs more effective. I'm waiting for that. Here's what we're going to do part. We're just in a cutting mode right now, and that leads to a lot of trepidation.
Thank you for being with us. We're out of time. We can't talk about Manitoba and Saskatchewan next time, Carrie. We visited with Carrie Luft of the Max McGraw Wildlife Foundation. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.